Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the F.M. Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.
So, Patrick, X-Men 97 is just released, which means everybody's talking about the X-Men.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, even Kara is going to talk about the X-Men today. So we thought we might start by just talking about, what's your relationship with the X-Men?
So I have a complicated relationship with the X-Men.
Is this because you're an Avengers guy?
Yes, that's one part of it, yes, is that I grew up an Avengers guy. At the time, Avengers was not the big popular title that X-Men was, so there's always been a little bit of resentment there.
Jealousy.
And then when I did get into the mutant titles, I came into it through kind of the more quirky ones. The first title I collected was Excalibur. And so I've always kind of gravitated more towards like the niche X-Men titles like Excalibur, Peter David's X-Factor, and things like that.
And not the main one.
I mean, yeah. I have collected the main one or ones here and there.
Yeah.
But I kind of gravitate towards the more niche ones.
So when I was a little kid, a copy of 95 just showed up in my hands. And that's the Death of Thunderbird.
Yes.
Probably the most unnecessary death.
You need to tell me what that is.
In all of comics history, like just like sacrificing in a way that doesn't matter, I think. But as a little kid, I was just totally captured. I think like Chris Claremont had a way of writing superhero stuff that also had kind of a soap opera-y kind of dynamic around it that worked really well. But I think the most important question for this intro is to ask Kara about her relationship with the X-Men.
I have none. Absolutely.
So is that true, or are you just trying to get off?
You haven't even seen the movies?
But like I told you guys before, I'm not deep into that lore. I watch these things for entertainment.
Yeah.
So for me to have an extensive conversation about it, I can't help you there. Okay.
So we'll make for an interesting show because certainly, I mean, the X-Men have been with us for a long time. They've recycled stories on a semi-regular basis for a long time. So as we talk about X-Men 97, we can talk about maybe what's old, what's new, and ultimately whether it's worth watching.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. That's next on The Pop Shop. Hi, I'm Alan Austin.
And I'm Patrick Hamilton.
Welcome to Pop Shop. Here, stories on the screen inspire conversations about the real world off of it.
And this week, we're going back to the 1990s with the second season of X-Men 97 from Marvel, streaming on Disney+. Will it be, to paraphrase Wolverine, the best there is at what it does? Or is season two an unfortunate evolution from season one?
Ooh. As always, because the internet rules our lives, if you're enjoying, please like, subscribe, turn on the notifications.
And as always, Pop Shop is brought to you by our friends at the Kirby Center, and we'll be talking with Neil from the Kirby Center in just a little bit.
But before Neil gets here, we should jump into the actual cartoon.
Yes, we
should. So X-Men 97 is, as you mentioned, season two, so it's following, not surprisingly, from season one. I think I can set it up pretty quickly. At the end of season one, two squads of X-Men are sent into two different places in the time stream. One is sent back to 3000 BC, where an evil pharaoh rules a world with cruelty and oppression. The other squad is sent into the future to 3096, where an evil despot rules with cruelty and oppression. And I suppose the questions of the season are, can the X-Men find their way back to the 1990s where they belong? Can they defeat their arch enemy, Apocalypse, along the way? And should we care that any of this is happening?
Well, I think the answer to the last question is obvious.
For you, I did.
But yeah, so like its first season, X-Men 97 Season 2 is drawing from any number of comic book sources. Perhaps not as quite a frenetic pace of them. But in particular, the first handful of episodes have largely drawn on two series from the 1990s. The Adventures of Cyclops and Phoenix, which saw Jean Grey and Cyclops pulled into the future to help raise their son, Nathan/Cable. And then the Rise of Apocalypse limited series from 1996, which detailed sort of Apocalypse's origin in ancient Egypt. And then the series is also kind of drawing, particularly in terms of characters, from a whole bunch of other things. We've got a version of the original X-Force. We've got stuff from the Uncanny X-Force title that followed later. We've got the Peter David X-Factor. We've got any number of characters from Generation X and Academy X and the Grant Morrison run of new X-Men floating around in the background. We even kind of dip our toes a little bit into some Eternals lore.
So as you put that list together, it reminds me something that that bothered me a little bit about the first season, and that there was so much packed into the show. And if you take all of those things packed together and then you wrap them together with time travel, that might give us a nice transition to the first major segment of the show, which will have no spoilers.
Yes.
Unless you want to learn how time travel works in superhero lore.
Possibly.
So if you've not seen season one, Patrick, of course, is the superhero scientist.
I don't know if I'd go that. I'm as much of one as we have here.
Well, probably not Kara.
I was saying, let's Kara,
do you have any background in superhero science?
Of course not.
Yeah, because you have a life. So.
Excuse me. Rude.
Fair point. No, so I should never insult science.
No.
Because where would we be if we didn't respect science? Well, I can't promise you superheroes.
And especially not superhero science.
So you may remember that I'm not a big fan of time travel.
Yes.
In superhero stories in particular.
Correct.
Because it leads to alternate timelines.
It can.
Which I find, number one, very off-putting, and number two, very confusing.
Yes.
So can I ask you a couple of questions in a non-spoilery kind of way to kind of hold my hand and walk me through this material?
I am happy to do so.
Okay. So if I know anything about time travel...
And whenever, you don't.
Well, fair point. So what I think I know about time travel is that when you go into the past, you're not supposed to change anything.
Correct.
Because if you do, it will have a butterfly effect that could potentially change the entire future.
That is one theory of time travel, yes.
Oh, do I have the wrong theory?
No.
Okay.
They're...
But they do say at some points during the show, like, make sure we don't disturb the past.
Yes, though, in one way, they're also going back to the past to completely disturb it, so...
Thank you. So this is... That raises a whole host of questions for me. So here's my first question that I wanted to write down. So how do you know what was meant to be? Like, what if you are supposed to travel back in time so that when you're there, you disturb the past, thus to create the future in which you live?
Okay, I might have gotten lost in the convolutions of that sentence as well.
Sorry. But when they go to the past, how do you know what you should change and what you shouldn't change to get to the future from which you've come?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question.
Thank you.
In that... There is kind of a little bit of an inconsistency in that they're worried that the X-Men, particularly being in the past, are going to change things. But the entire purpose of them being sent there is to, in fact, change the past, to somehow prevent Apocalypse's rise. It sort of seems to be their entire intent.
So they're meaning to change the past, then?
That, I mean, at least, well, Magneto is. That seems to be his plan, and the others, I think, are begrudgingly going along with it.
But it would seem like if they do that, it would change the entire future. They could all cease to exist.
Well,
In one alternate universe.
So here's where it depends what sort of time travel mechanism we're using.
Yeah, okay, yes.
In that, is it the kind of thing where you go back in time and whatever you change doesn't change the time you came from, but just causes a new version of reality to branch off from
that one. That's a terrible theory, but I'll hear a second one.
So that's the one.
Yeah.
The other one is that, no matter if we sort of think of as time as fixed, no matter what you do in the past, it's still going to end up exactly where you originally were. That you actually can't go back and change the past. That even if you go back and, you know, do things slightly differently, time is going to somehow adjust or account for that. So it ends up the same way. Or to look at it this way, you know, them going back to the past is already part of their timeline that just hadn't happened yet. And so it's already factored in, and what they're doing is not going to change the timeline. It's part of the timeline that they're already in.
So in the future, they're supposed to go back to the past to create their future. But in the first time through, if they haven't been back to their past, they can't exist in the future. Kara, I think I stumped the scientist.
No, well, that was again.
So they live in the present, right?
Yes.
It is theirs. And they have to go back into the past to create their present. But there's got to be a first time through the timeline.
No, because they're not trying to create their present. They're trying to change their present by going back to the past.
Right, but the idea that you always end up at the same place, right? So that means you had to go back to create the place that you were.
Yes.
Isn't it a chicken and an egg proposition?
It is a chicken and egg proposition.
That you can't answer.
I'm sorry, superhero science. I'm pretty sure I just can't answer it. No, I did answer it. Time is fixed. And so that.
So are we working on the theory that time is fixed, or that they're creating a new timeline?
It seems to be that. I mean, that was in the scene in the first season of Loki,
right?
When Loki is brought up by the Time Variance Authority for his messing with time, he says something about like, "Well, the Avengers went back in time and did much worse than I did. Why aren't they on trial?"
Right.
And the person says that was supposed to happen. And so it's kind of the same thing here in that the X-Men going back in time may be what they were supposed to do and thus isn't going to change anything.
So is there no free will? Everything is just fated in this universe?
Possibly.
Okay. Yeah. You seem disappointed by this this logical conclusion that there is no free will or choice.
Well, that is somewhat depressing, yes.
Yeah. For us or for the show or for superheroes generally.
For all of that. It's all. Okay. It's all.
Well, yes. We don't mean to depress. So let me ask you another question.
Okay, good.
How dare you? By which I mean to say, who gets to decide who gets to change the past and who doesn't? Is it just the people with the ability to change the past?
In this case, it would be one particular figure that identifies themselves as responsible for sending the teams into both time frames.
Yes.
Which, since we're in the non-spoiler section, I won't mention the name.
Fair point.
So there is a character that, though, it doesn't really make sense because if that person is sending the team back to the past to change things, then they don't need to do anything in the future because going back to the past is going to change that future.
And yet, when they
hence, why not just send all of the X-Men back to the past so that there's more of them to deal with the situation?
And yet, when they bring people to the future, they're using it to shape the future differently. It's very weird.
Yeah.
Because there's a tutoring aspect that's kind of going on. It's very convoluted to me. Let me ask you a more simple question.
Okay.
How do you meet back up after you've traveled in time? Because there's a moment where the one group comes back and they're just sitting at a table and they're saying, where's everybody else?
Well, they've got the time travel bracelets.
So what?
Bishop came back to the past.
Yes.
He went to the future, sorry. They all got time travel bracelets, and so they went back to their present.
But what time in the present?
I guess long after they left.
So is their present just always the present? I'm very confused.
It's 1997.
But that's a broad range of time. And if I said to you...
Yeah, it seems to be a few months after the end of season one.
Patrick and Kara, let's get together for a cup of coffee in 2026. You would say, that's not a reasonable...
Well, clearly Bishop and Forge probably figured out what time they were going to come back to. But they're coming back to approximately where they left or not long after.
Okay. Can I ask you one final question?
Yes.
This section wraps... Why are the 1990s the most dangerous time for the X-Men, besides the fact that this is called X-Men 97?
Yeah, in the show, they say that the X-Men are at their weakest, which I guess means that some of them are lost in time, and so there aren't really... I mean, in the present day, there aren't currently X-Men. We have X-Force and X-Factor. There's no X-Men running around. They're all in time. So it might just be that they're not there, but that's what it gets said in the show is that... The 1990s is when the X-Men are at their weakest, and so that's why they're attacking them.
So they had just stayed in the 90s, everything would have been okay.
It depends. Are we saying it's because they're not there, or is it something about the team that's in there that's not as strong for some reason? I don't know. But that's the idea that's mentioned in the show several times, is that they're going to the 90s because that's when the X-Men are most vulnerable for reasons.
Excellent. So, Kara, are you as satisfied and happy as I am that
we finally understand
time travel?
I think I did a fantastic job there.
Yes, you did, but also...
All right, Kara, could you just explain back the conversation we had in 30 seconds? Can you summarize it for the audience?
I think we should just move on.
And moving on means that our friends from the Kirby Center are here.
Yes.
So we'll take a break. When we come back, we will do the spoiler-filled segment of the show, where we start asking some deeper questions about.
I thought those questions were pretty deep.
Well, even deeper, if one can imagine.
And once again, we're here with our friend Neil from the FM Kirby Center to talk to us about all the things going on there this week.
It's wild. We have so much going on this week. How are you guys doing today? Talking X-Men 97?
Oh, there's nothing I like better.
You were just pitching yourself as Professor N.
I was going to say.
So, assume you're a big fan.
That's right. I mean, it's definitely not going to be Academy. It'd be more of an institution, but I'll do my best to just give people some mind waves and tell them what's happening at the Kirby. So,
all professors are good professors.
That's right.
Hopefully. Yeah. Obviously. I mean, definitely in all canon, all the professors are good people.
100%. I've never seen anything in pop culture that would vilify a professor.
Exactly. When you think of positive mentors and adults, I think of the next classic film coming to the Kirby Center.
Excellent.
You know who that is? Mary Poppins.
Oh.
Great mentor towards young ones.
That's right. She really should open her own school.
Honestly, she that could be kind of amazing.
That's the
idea. Ooh, everything in the
Mary Poppins too.
Copyright. They
the
were, institution. Didn't they already do that?
With, they did with
Emily Blunt. Wasn't that kind of a?
Yeah, she was great.
And so then we had Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins 3 but back to
let's
school.
Let's focus on the original Mary Poppins.
This was the original, yeah. The classic yes. film. Yeah. Mary Poppins is going to be, comes to the FM Kirby Center Wednesday. There's two showings, 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. In the evening. It's brought to us by Flashback Cinema. That is always an amazing time. You actually get to see a fun reel before. You know how, like, back in the day, they'd have this whole reel, like, this is how the movie is made, and get to see that kind
oh,
of
yeah.
stuff?
Yeah.
We would do that before our classic films.
It oh, very cool.
Absolutely
oh,
delightful.
Very nice.
And then yeah. on Tuesdays, as we talked about before, mm-hmm. we have our Honesdale National Bank Big Screen Summer Series. Yeah. And again, another strong female-led group. Now, they're not X-Men, but it is Elsa, and it mm-hmm. is Frozen 2, mm-hmm. which, oh, when you think of superpowered females, unbelievable. I know you guys talked about Supergirl last week, but mm-hmm. this whole week, we're lined up. We're ready to go.
Yeah, yeah, we kind of debated, actually, whether Mary Poppins was a superhero.
I could see
and Elsa as well.
Yeah,
yes.
yeah, the, yeah. Elsa seems more clear to me.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, but Mary Poppins clearly is.
They both have super yeah. fantastical powers.
And Mary Poppins right. would fall more, I think, on the magical side of things, like a Doctor Strange, Scarlet Witch type.
He's still that. A superhero, though.
Yeah, yeah, right, but yeah. kind of more on the magical side of
Fair
things.
Fair enough.
I think that's absolutely wonderful. But the good news, too, is that don't forget...
There's with, more good
with
news?
For, Frozen 2, children 12 and under get in free.
That is big news.
And if you come in early, we'll have Camp United at the Kirby, which is a free summer camp for children on Tuesdays at the Kirby Center. And you get to come, play fun activities and games, you get a fun prizes, you get a free lunch, free story time, and a free book, as well as getting to see a free movie. And you might even get free popcorn. It's, you know, between us and... anyone who's watching.
What about people who are 12 and under in spirit?
Well, I'm 12 and under in spirit. Sometimes you can get in for the low, low price of $5.
But that what, seems fair.
And the popcorn fee is?
And the popcorn fee would depend on the size popcorn you would get.
Because the popcorn is like super important.
Oh my gosh. The popcorn is very important. The popcorn at the Kirby is kind of the best popcorn. I'm saying it.
I've heard you say that before.
I'm putting it out there. And you know what? Yeah. I'm consistent. I'm saying it again. It's yeah. really good. Just like how in X-Men 97, the season they did last time, remember it? That was the best yeah. episode. That our popcorn is the remember it of popcorn.
Okay.
There you go. Amazing.
Yeah.
Strong words.
It's happening.
Yeah.
That's very true.
That's right.
Mission accomplished.
There we go. Right. Excellent. Well done.
We did it. Yeah, thank you, everyone. So enjoy KirbyCenter.org for more information.
Yep.
Thanks, Neil. Always good to have Neil here.
Yeah, yes.
And welcome back to Pop Shop.
And thank you, Neil, for coming by and talking to us about all the things going on at the Kirby Center.
Absolutely. So, Patrick, it seems to me, speaking in very broad and general terms,
mm-hmm.
that the X-Men as sort of characters get a lot of credit as sort of metaphors of social difference.
Yes.
That for a long time, people have talked about Professor X and Magneto mm-hmm. as Martin Luther King and Malcolm X.
Yes.
Now, in our book, All New, All Different,
A History of Race and the American Superhero, available from University of Texas Press.
That's right, available at fine booksellers near you. We complicate that a little bit.
Yes.
We do take issue with sort of the broad celebration mm-hmm. and try to make it a little more complicated. So we tried to complicate the conversation.
Yes.
But more recently, mm-hmm. the artist John Byrne
yep.
has really complicated the conversation by yep. saying essentially that Stan Lee never meant it as a racial metaphor,
Correct.
But when people started praising it as a metaphor... Mm-hmm. Stan Lee was sort of like, oh, I can live with that,
yeah.
and ran with it. He yeah. says the metaphor wasn't King and Malcolm X at
Correct.
All, that it was Franklin Roosevelt
yes.
and Hitler.
Yes, yes. Ben yeah. Xavier, which I worry that the only reason he's connecting Xavier to FDR is because they're both in wheelchairs. And that's as far as he goes. I don't see a ton of FDR in Xavier.
I would say
yeah, he's not entirely wrong on Magneto. I mean, when Magneto first yeah. shows up in the comics, he is your typical Marvel villain out to destroy, you know, the Earth, not for or destroy humanity, not
right.
for reasons that develop later on, but just yeah. simply because he wants to destroy them.
Right, and his character becomes more complicated and probably
yes.
interesting in the 80s when it's revealed that he was a Holocaust survivor,
yes.
and that probably complicates Byrne's reading. A little bit further.
Well, Byrne, I think he's gone on record saying that's one of the things he really did not like about Claremont and
yeah.
his redemption well, of Magneto was he did not like that backstory being added. So
and
he's,
I think,
he's a strong object. He strongly objects to that.
I think Byrne has a long list of strong objections
yes,
to
does.
X-Men and really the comic business
mm-hmm.
in general. The only thing I can see in Byrne that maybe if there's a glimmer of Roosevelt mm-hmm. in Xavier insofar as Stan Lee's early Marvel enterprise was grounded in sort of a vaguely mild liberalism mm-hmm. that you might associate coming out of the New Deal mm-hmm. and Franklin Roosevelt.
Yeah, there's kind of a Xavier is kind of working through the system. Magneto clearly is working outside of the system. Right. In the same way that in X-Men 97, you've got X-Factor and X-Force kind of representing those. X-Factor being yeah. government-sponsored and so part of the system. X-Force obviously being kind of the renegades and thus outside of the system.
Yeah, and I want
to kind of see that.
I'd like to come back to that in a little more detail, but I know you wanted to talk a little bit about metaphors and how they were deployed in season one.
Yeah, so season
maybe that will set the stage.
Yeah, so season one very directly kind of tackled the issue of X-Men as a metaphor, particularly for race or as you said, sort of social differences in general. What I found really interesting for most of the series is it seemed to be heading in a fairly radical direction in the sense that Magneto was right. Mm-hmm. Even the X-Men kind of start to come to that. And yeah. then I was kind of disappointed in the end of the season because it veered into kind of respectability politics in that the X-Men are fighting Bastion, who is kind of a human cyborg, you know, hybrid person who's been yeah. literally trying to wipe them out. And as the X-Men are battling them, the X-Men, in particular Cyclops, decide that the only way to defeat Bastion is to prove themselves better than him. Mm-hmm. And basically they offer him membership. And the idea that the person who has literally killed, you know, hundreds of mutants, if not more, suddenly you have to, like, accept him into your ranks to somehow make you guys look better
yeah.
and be the better person. I did not like that ending at all.
And that is a long tradition in comics, especially yeah. Marvel comics as well, of sort of the people who are the victims mm-hmm. having a responsibility to reach out and create brotherhood.
Yeah, and in pop culture in general. Yeah, there's Donald Absolutely. Bogle talks about it in yeah. His book on African-American cinema about the Absolutely. Idea of African-Americans having to overprove themselves. Yeah. And it's another... So veered into kind of problematic areas in the end.
But to me, that's veering into sort of that vaguely liberal... New Deal
yes.
kind of mindset of that presents fairly superficial ways yeah. of addressing mm-hmm. systemic racial yeah. problems in the country in which we live. And so, like, building from that in the second season, as mm-hmm. a historian, one of the things that really struck me was the way in which this is such a bleak view of history, mm. right? It starts in 3000 BC, mm-hmm. where you have a pharaoh who rules completely by like military mm-hmm. might.
Not just any pharaoh.
Right.
Ramatut.
Who has a long history in Marvel Comics.
Yes. Who, of course, is King the Conqueror as well.
Yeah, that's so complicated. But so it's a world of slavery mm-hmm. and suffering. And even when En-Sabinor, who's about to become Apocalypse,
yes.
leads the slave revolt, it's not a revolt that's about liberation broadly defined. Right. I think Apocalypse is perfectly fine with the system as it exists. Mm-hmm. He just wants to be on the top of it.
Yeah, I think that's
because
fair to say.
If you then spin ahead to 3096, where Apocalypse is, mm-hmm. spoiler, on top of the system,
yep.
it's just as oppressive, it's just as cruel.
Mm-hmm.
That Apocalypse, his revolution is not really a revolution at all. It's
no.
just a changing of the guard.
Yeah, it's just changing the system who's on top and who's on the bottom.
And I think when you get to the 90s then, you have this really dispiriting debate between X-Factor and mm-hmm. X-Force. Like, the two solutions to this kind of impending crisis. Mm-hmm. One is, to put it real quickly, X-Factor, mm-hmm. who work with the government
yes.
in ways that circumvent the law
mm-hmm.
and the courts
yep.
and the Constitution. They're
yes.
essentially a paramilitary force
mm-hmm.
that rounds up mutants that
yep.
it deems to be a threat in some way.
Yes, which is a right. slight variant on the original X-Factor,
yeah.
In which that they were pretending to be humans who were doing that, rounding up mutants, but they were actually helping them escape and, right. and sheltering them.
But here, X-Factor...
That part's not... The second part's not really there with X-Factor.
Right.
They are literally just rounding up mutants.
Right, and in an extra-legal way.
Yeah.
And their counterpart in the 90s
mm-hmm.
would be X-Force in this.
Yes.
Which also, I would say, and you're going to know this is coming, uses extra-legal... means
Possibly.
In ways that I find very disturbing. There's this
yeah.
one moment where they've captured War, one of Apocalypse's
oh, yes.
horsemen, and they've tied him to a scrawny little pine tree
mm-hmm.
with a rope. And I just as an aside,
mm-hmm.
do you really think a guy that has created genocide and war and mass casualties for millennia
mm-hmm.
can just be tied by rope to a tree?
It's really good rope.
Yeah, we'll leave
It's mutant rope.
We'll leave that aside. So Archangel then punches him, and I thought, well, that's like, you know, overstepping what we should do. And then Archangel, on Cable's orders, executes him.
Yes.
Off screen, but
Cable
but,
hands him the gun.
And we then see, we hear the blast off screen. And
yes.
So the answer to X-Factor is the same as X-Factor, that it's extra legal violence, it's vigilantism, it's this idea that, I think Cable believes this, I'm a good guy, I'm well-intentioned, so you should just trust me.
Yeah.
And the only one that questions that at all in this show, I think, is Jubilee.
Oh, yeah.
Who number one, kind of convinces Polaris, part of X-Factor, to think a little bit differently about the world, and starts working on Cable as well. But there's, like, that's it. Like, Jubilee is literally the only firework of hope in this show.
Oh, I like what you're doing with the firework there.
Thank you.
Firework there, yeah. Yeah, no, it is. I will say, one of the other things that I think season two does better than season one is the X-Force episode, a large part of it, kind of puts a nice spotlight on Jubilee.
Absolutely.
Which they tried in season one, but it's in an episode that if you took it out of season one, would not affect any of season one.
That's the video game
The video episode, game
right?
one, yeah.
yeah.
This one, it actually felt like Jubilee got a nice spotlight that actually mattered, and that she frees all of the mutants that have been captured by X-Factor.
Yes.
And basically takes on, you know, all of the military support that X-Factor has on it, and defeats them. So I did like that in terms of spotlighting her as a character. This season worked better than last.
This is how much I appreciated Jubilee. I'm tired of needle drops generally.
Yeah.
But when Veruca Salt all of a sudden shows up and it's that fight scene, it's actually really well done.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need needle drops anymore to be like perfectly clear, but that one kind of worked,
one did
I thought, pretty nicely.
Yeah, and we should just say, you know, I think across the board, the animation for X-Men 97 Season 2 is as good, if not better, than Season 1.
It's this blend of sort of a nostalgic 90s vibe with some really nice modern touches.
Yeah, I find really interesting going back when the show was first announced for Season 1, and like the trailer was leaked, there were people complaining about the animation, which I never understood, because the animation on the show is gorgeous.
It's very much what it intends to be. You know, every once in a while it might look a little cheaply done, but I think it's only as an homage to how cheaply done some 90s cartoons are.
And the X-Men cartoon in particular had some not well done moments.
That is absolutely for sure. So we've talked through time travel.
Yes, we have.
Kara now 100% understands.
As does our audience.
And me.
Yes.
Right? So you've educated all of us.
Thank you,
Professor Hamilton.
That's right. And if you have further questions about time travel, you could always put them in the comments. And while you're there, why not like the episode and subscribe and turn on notifications so you never miss an episode of Pop Shop?
You could literally not miss a single shred scrap of what we're producing.
Yep.
Speaking of that, it's time now to take our very complicated conversation.
Yes.
And boil it down to a simple pop or shop.
Yes,
pop,
indeed.
This is something that people should definitely make sure they go to see. Shop, this is something people should 100% pass upon.
Yes.
Yes.
So, Kara, where do you fall?
Yes.
I fall nowhere. I actually did not watch the second season. I'm so sorry. I did watch the first season.
Okay.
When it first came out.
It was so good, it did not get her to watch season two.
When Kara said she had no relationship with the X-Men.
I think I need to watch the first season again. I think I watched it at the wrong time.
I do recommend rewatching season one before season two.
I do too, as somebody who did not.
Yes.
Yeah. Would have been helpful.
Yeah, I will do that. Okay. I don't think I was in the right headspace to embrace that show.
But after the last 30 minutes, Kara's like, oh,
wow, I've got to watch this.
Headspace corrected.
There's time travel?
That's right. So am I next? All right, so I am going to give it a little pop. Like, it pops for me. I think it's worth it.
You're exhausting.
Hey, you're going to make... Your puns are exhausting. We exhaust each other in different kinds of ways. I think it's worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
It's not... I don't think the greatest thing I've ever seen. I think my complaint would be, there are a couple of moments, by the way, if you're squeamish at all about violence, where it is more violent than you would expect
there's,
a 90s cartoon to be.
There is some pretty profound violence in this season.
I enjoyed it, but I found that what made me uncomfortable the first season made me a little bit uncomfortable. They're going so fast. Like they run through storylines so fast.
It's a little bit slower than last season, but they're still putting a lot of stuff together.
But I think the show would be better Like, you could do any one of those issues or those story arcs you mm-hmm. talked about at the top. That could be a season. It would be really interesting. And as somebody who read a lot of those stories, we're just going through them so quickly. Yeah. So, for me, it's better than a shruggy pop.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a full pop. It's a little pop.
Yeah. I'm sure.
How about you?
This will shock people.
Is it a big pop?
It is a pop for me. Yes.
I mean, I do
have some issues. I feel like there's a big jump from season one to season two in that season one ended with Wolverine's adamantium ripped out of him, and he opens season two seemingly better.
He's got that healing factor.
He's got his bone claws and whatnot, but I'm like, oh, we're just kind of like jumping over all of that. So like that seemed to me like a big thing to kind of jump over the actual showing of.
Well, in the comic book, after he gets ripped out, it totally changes his personality and his character.
Yes, it's a much longer story.
For quite some time.
And one that I'm perfectly fine with them not doing a lot.
So can we just chalk it up to healing factor and move on?
Except his healing factor seems a little compromised as well.
Well, it's because he's doing a lot of other healing.
Yeah, there's a big jump there.
There is.
And I did find going back to Egypt storyline, I did not particularly... It kind of dragged for me a little bit. I just found that a little bit meh.
It's interesting. For me, it was the Ascani in the future.
That was over in one episode, so that was quick.
Yeah, true.
But I will say I really enjoyed the X-Force episode. And the way they redid the credits, I thought was hilarious. I kind of enjoy that it's an X-Force that beyond Cable does not include anyone who was originally with X-Force.
Yes, but like seeing the X Factor of Strong Guy and Wolfsbane.
It's my favorite X Factor.
It's the Peter David written X Factor.
That's the Peter David X Factor. That's great.
The best,
I'm glad to see them. They had appeared before. So it is all of that set aside. Okay. It is a strong pop from me.
Okay. So overall,
I'm looking forward to seeing how basically the second half of the season goes. But so far, it seems to be a worthy successor to season one.
So Kara passing seems like it's still a pop, nonetheless.
Yeah.
For us. So, as always, thank you again for joining us for this episode of the WVIA Pop Shop.
Yes, and if you liked what you heard, again, be sure to go and like the episode, subscribe to the podcast, and turn on notifications so you never miss an episode.
That's right. And Patrick, what's next week?
Well, before next week, we should thank our friends at the Kirby Center
once again for sponsoring the show
and for stopping by to talk to us about what's going on at the Kirby Center.
Thank you, friends at the Kirby Center.
Yes. As for next week's show...
Yes.
We are going to be talking about what might be the movie sensation of the summer.
It has to be.
Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey. Is it a film of mythic proportions? Or does it lose its way and never quite make it home? Find out next week on Pop Shop.
Come join the party.
Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the FM Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre. Presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.